Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today, and it's my great pleasure to have Susan Franson co-hosting with me. Susan, you've been in Europe for a while. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's really great to be back.
So it's a pleasure to be doing a show with you again, and tomorrow is Election Day, and you've been helping me with preparing for that. So remember to vote, and to help with that, Susan, you'll be bringing a rundown of the candidates running for contested seats for the school board, articulating in their own words what they see as each of their priorities and unique offerings that they bring to the office.
First, though, let's take a quick look at the weather for this coming week and the news. Basically, it's cool days in the low 40s and 30s and cold nights in the 20s. No precipitation predicted this week for a change, so no rain, no snow. Days should be pretty sunny, partly sunny, with more sun later in the week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And for a rundown of Iowa news for the past week, here's Digital Dennis. All yours,
Thanks
Dee
very
Dee.
Much. Take it away. It is great to be back here on Local Talk on this first Monday in November. There was plenty of news around Iowa last week, the most talked about event being snow, the first snowfall of the season. The heaviest snowfall was concentrated near the border with Illinois. East central Iowa saw anywhere from 2 to 4 inches of snow. Story and Boone counties had reports of nearly 2 inches of the white stuff. Meanwhile, there was word that this was the wettest October on record in Des Moines. More than 7 inches of precipitation fell on the capital city last month. There was also word last week that the Iowa Department of Transportation is raising sections of Interstate 29 after high water closed parts of that interstate for more than 100 days this year. The goal is to make the interstate less vulnerable to the flood-prone Missouri River. Of course, politics made big news last week around the nation and around Iowa. The U.S. House of Representatives voted largely along partisan lines to authorize an impeachment inquiry against President Trump. Iowa's three Democratic members of the U.S. House of Representatives, Cindy Axne, Abby Finkenauer, and Dave Lobsack, voted in favor of a resolution to formalize the procedures of the inquiry. Steve King, Iowa's only Republican in the House, voted against the resolution. Meanwhile, about a dozen Democratic presidential candidates entertained and talked at the Iowa Democratic Party's biggest event of the year on Friday night in Des Moines. It was the party's Liberty and Justice celebration, and 13,000 people filed into the Wells Fargo Event Center to see and hear the candidates. Among them, former Vice President Joe Biden, who talked about the moral soul of the nation. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders highlighted ideas such as Medicare for All and the Green New Deal. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren said Democrats won't get what they don't fight for. South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg talked about parallels with former President Obama, who used that same Des Moines event in 2007 to propel his campaign. Those four candidates were not the only ones to show up at Friday night's event, but they are the four who topped the latest New York Times poll of likely Democratic caucus-goers in Iowa. That poll, which came out Friday, shows Warren supported by 22% of those likely caucus-goers, followed by Sanders with 19%, Buttigieg with 18%, and Biden with 17%. No other candidate had more than 4% support. Earlier Friday, Democrat Beto O'Rourke announced that he was dropping out of the presidential race. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds also made news last week when she said she does not plan to sign an executive order that would ban vaping products. This as national public health officials continue to investigate an outbreak of illnesses related to e-cigarettes. The governor said she's going to focus on other things that might be done in regards to those cigarettes. The governor made more news when she announced that she was appointing a special committee to focus on getting as many Iowans as possible to take part in next year's census. Lieutenant Governor Adam Gregg will chair that committee. Next year's census will be the first to let people respond online. There was also word last week that Iowa's economy had remained steady over the past couple of months. But the State Department of Revenue reported in its latest leading indicators index that broad-based signals of weakness in the state's economy continued, suggesting that over the next few months, the employment growth will slow down. Also last week, the Des Moines Register reported that Amazon was hiring distribution staff to work in Grimes, adding, the newspaper said, to the likelihood that a giant warehouse planned by an undisclosed company in Bondurant is also an Amazon facility. Online postings show the web retail giant is looking for a shift manager and 2 area managers. An Amazon spokesperson did not respond to an email seeking confirmation that the company is planning a distribution center in Grimes. In medical news last week, an Iowa State Board recommended that medical marijuana should be a prescription option for treating post-traumatic stress disorder, but it rejected the drug for 2 other conditions that petitioners had requested. The board decided not to allow patients with opioid dependency and those with Alzheimer's disease to have legal access to medical marijuana. Board members expressed concerns over the lack of studies or other evidence that medical marijuana would help those conditions. Also last week, more details were released about the Iowa grandmother who was killed at a gender reveal party in Marion County. The family had intended to create a spectacle and put gunpowder in a homemade contraption, expecting to blow some colored powder skyward. Instead, the device functioned like a pipe bomb, and metal debris from the explosion killed one of the celebrating relatives. 56-year-old Pamela Kremeyer died instantly when the debris struck her in the head in a home in rural Knoxville, Iowa. Meanwhile, KCCI-TV reported last week that there had been a second gender reveal explosion in Iowa. This one took place in Waukee. Officials said a commercially available gender reveal kit was the cause. No injuries or damage occurred. Gender reveal parties have become increasingly popular over the years as families seek out new ways to reveal the biological sex of a soon-to-be-born child. In another story, authorities said a woman died after her oxygen tank exploded in a southern Iowa home. 58-year-old Diane Golos died in the incident in Moravia, about 75 miles southeast of Des Moines. In Boone this past Saturday night, 9 cars on a Union Pacific train derailed. The rail cars, part of a westbound train, derailed behind the Hy-Vee and Dollar General stores. That caused a natural gas leak, forcing the evacuations of a few businesses. No one was injured. In the Boone County community of Ogden on Saturday night, firefighters battled a blaze at a downtown grocery store. It broke out at the Ogden Mart. No one was injured. Also last week, word of a strange incident that had taken place at Jack Trice Stadium in Ames a couple of weekends ago when Iowa State University played Oklahoma State. Seems a fan tumbled from the upper deck at the stadium during the game and landed on fans sitting below. It's not clear how many fans were injured, but emergency medical professionals responded and provided treatment. And in another story involving Iowa State University, between 100 and 200 people gathered at University President Wendy Winterstein's office on campus this past week. They were protesting neo-Nazi writings that had been found on campus. Winterstein was not in her office, but she took part in a phone conversation with the protesters, who had showed up after messages such as "Heil Hitler," "No trans rights," and anti-Semitic slogans were scrawled in chalk throughout campus. Posters and stickers advocating white nationalist viewpoints have surfaced at ISU on multiple occasions for the past 3 years. Also in Ames last week, a student brought a fake gun to Ames High School. Authorities quickly found the antique spud gun after another student reported seeing it. A spud gun is usually used to shoot potato pellets. Ames police were contacted. The school cannot disclose what happened after that. In yet another school-related story, the Easton Valley Community School District in Jackson County was shut down on Friday after a student allegedly made a threat on social media with a weapon the night before. Police were able to identify the student who was arrested at home. Also last week, 2 men charged with burglary after they were found inside an Iowa courthouse while they were under contract with the state's judicial branch pleaded not guilty. The 2 had told officials that they were under orders from the security firm Coalfire to test the security at the Dallas County Courthouse. Meanwhile, a deputy in eastern Iowa was placed on administrative leave last week for his alleged role in a bar fight. Linn County Deputy Robert E. Amos was charged with assault after he allegedly grabbed a man's face and threatened him with a firearm. In Des Moines, police found a stolen handgun that had been thrown into brush during an early morning chase last week. The gun was found near Monroe Elementary School after authorities tried to pull over 23-year-old Malik Trotter of Fort Madison, who allegedly had been driving without a license near the intersection of Martin Luther King Parkway and Hickman Road. Trotter fled, and officers pursued him. Authorities said he threw the handgun into brush near the school before the chase ended. Meanwhile, the owner of a northern Iowa dog breeding operation who was convicted of animal neglect was given 2 years probation last week. 66-year-old Barbara Cavers of Manly was sentenced to 420 days in jail, suspended, and fined $65 on each of 14 counts. She will also be prohibited from owning and breeding any dogs and can only own 1 cat during her probation. Prosecutors say she was holding dogs under inhumane conditions when officials raided her operation and confiscated about 150 canines. It was also reported last week that a Des Moines lawyer will have her law license revoked for at least 5 years after the Iowa Supreme Court decided that she had withheld a client's money that she was not entitled to. The lawyer is Tina Muhammad, who had refused to refund $7,500 from a client after the client had severed ties with her. In Urbandale last week, developers of an affordable housing project that was rejected earlier this year asked for a second chance. They'll ask for a rezoning of an empty lot near Merle Hay Mall for 43 apartment units along Douglas Avenue between IHOP and Papa John's Pizza. In the world of college football around Iowa this past weekend, Well, it was a smaller world than usual because both Iowa State University and the University of Iowa had the weekend off. But the University of Northern Iowa did play, and the Panthers defeated Illinois State 27-10. Just one more note before I go, and perhaps you saw this one on the front page of the Des Moines Register on Saturday. It's about Joy the Pig. That's right, Joy the Pig. Joy is an American mini pig who does tricks outside a movie theater in Newton. And the Guinness World Record book has just named her the fastest trick porker in the world. That's right, Joy the Pig completed 13 tricks in under 1 minute. And if you need to know more about Joy and her tricks, remember it was on the front page of Saturday's Des Moines Register. And there you have it, your last word from me, your summary of the past week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Digital Dennis, happy as always to have been here on this part of the electromagnetic spectrum known as KHOI, and promising to make a return visit to these parts on Friday, when I'll look at what's been happening around Ames. Until then, go ahead. Feel free to have a great week.
It's a long and dusty road, a hot and a heavy load. The folks I meet ain't always kind. Some are bad and some are good. Some have done the best they could. Some have tried to ease my trouble in mind. And I can't help but wonder where I'm bound, where I'm bound. Can't help but wonder where I'm bound. I've been wandering through this land, doing the best I can, trying to find what I was meant to do. And the people that I see look as worried as can be, and it looks like they are wondering too. And I can't help but wonder where I'm bound, where I'm bound. Can't help but wonder where I'm bound. Now I had a little girl one time, she had lips like sherry wine, and she loved me till my head went plumb insane. But I was too blind to see, she was drifting away from me, and my good gal went off on a morning train. And I can't help but wonder where I'm bound, where I'm bound. Can't help but wonder where I'm bound. And I had a buddy back home, but he started out to roam, and I hear he's out by Frisco Bay. And sometimes when I've had a few, his old voice comes a-ringing through, and I'm going out to see him some old day. And I can't help but wonder where I'm bound, where I'm bound. Can't help but wonder where I'm bound.
Well, Tom Paxton with I Can't Help But Wonder Where I'm Bound, a favorite song of Paul Nelson, our chief engineer, who recently passed away. We heard the song performed live yesterday by local musicians during what turned out to be an extraordinarily warming gathering at KHOI in remembrance of Paul. Right, Cynthia? Cynthia doesn't have a microphone. She's engineering. But Cynthia brought incredible food, but of pork, right? Oh, now this warrants a microphone. Okay, here's Cynthia.
I got my husband a smoker for Christmas, and all I have to do is tell him we're going to smoke some pork butt, and for kind of a wake moment for the wonderful Paul Nelson that passed away, and smoked a couple pork butts, and it was
And there was a whole lot. There was prosciutto. There was
chili. We had a charcuterie tray.
How many desserts did we have?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't do the desserts. I had enough with all the other stuff. I made a salmon dip. It was great.
Basically, sticky buns because Paul loved sticky buns.
Yes. Basically, if Paul walked in, he was a foodie. He would have loved it. So that was the whole thing. And
there were
and,
even delicacies from Turkey.
Yes, there was like baklava and some things. And it was in live music. It was a wonderful way to basically say we appreciated him.
Yeah, and thank you so much to the musicians who created an afternoon of music that really brought to life our collective love of Paul. Mm-hmm. It was very, very beautiful. Thank you for everyone for the incredible food. And thank you to everybody who came to share the afternoon of remembering Paul and appreciating our neighbors. There will be a memorial service for Paul on the 16th at the Unitarian Universalist on Highland Avenue, and that will be at 2 o'clock on November 16th. And I think that some of the musicians that came together yesterday at KHOI are going to reconstitute themselves at that memorial as well, so it should be really, really nice. On November 16th, there's also going to be a conference held in Des Moines, quite a segue here, and it's called Empowered to Action, and this conference is being held by an organization called Informed Choice Iowa. Shanda Burke is president of Informed Choice Iowa. Welcome to Local Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so what is Informed Choice Iowa?
We are a nonprofit group that fights for medical freedom specifically as it pertains to vaccinations.
Okay, and we'll get into that a little bit more later. You're primarily a lobbying group, is that correct?
That is correct.
So tell me a little bit how exactly you lobby and what exactly are you lobbying for?
So our group goes down to the Capitol and meets with legislators and talks to them about our stance on medical freedoms and how we think that should continue to be a right that Iowans have, give them information on that.
And are your lobbyists, do you have paid lobbyists or who,
no.
who are the people that are doing this?
All of our members, it's all volunteer. No one gets paid.
Uh-huh. So this is a group that's statewide?
We are a statewide group, yes.
Yeah, you're from Altoona.
Yep.
Is that correct? Uh-huh. And is this an organization that's connected with a national organization, or is this unique to Iowa?
There's organizations like this across the nation. We specifically work with the National Vaccine Information Center, mm-hmm. which is a national organization.
Okay, so maybe you can describe a little bit what that is. What is the National Vaccine Center?
So the National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC, is a group that helps at the federal level continue to lobby for vaccine freedoms, and they also help around the nation with state at the state level. They help state groups with like writing bills and stuff like that.
So this is a very specific topic. How did you end up being so involved? You're the president of this Iowa group.
Yes.
Which sounds like it's somewhat connected to other groups around the country, but it's also an independent Iowa group.
Yep.
So what brought you on this path?
So I'm actually a certified medical assistant. I worked in a family practice office in Ankeny and Urbandale. I worked in two different ones for a total of 6 years. So giving vaccines was a part of my daily job. And I got to see firsthand, quite honestly, just the lack of informed consent that went into it.
And, what does that mean, lack of informed consent?
I never, ever once read a vaccine insert and actually told a patient, hey, your kid could have seizures later today.
So you're saying people were coming in and giving their children vaccines without really knowing possible
side effects of what could happen.
Uh-huh. And what kind of vaccines are we talking about here?
The normal childhood schedule, pertussis, tetanus, pneumonia, chickenpox, measles, rubella, all mm-hmm. those kind of stuff.
And so what was there a particular experience that led you to want to take on activism?
I read a vaccine insert and was like, wow, I've never, ever told a patient any of this stuff, and I have given this vaccine a lot. And then it just kind of morphed into wanting to be able to continue to make that choice and realizing that that would require me to become active at the Capitol and on a political level.
Did you ever receive resistance at clinics to offering this choice or this information to patients?
I didn't offer it a lot when I was working. I pretty much stopped working.
Oh, okay. So you felt that strongly about it.
Mm-hmm. I would never go back into the medical field.
You needed to really take a different path.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you go back to the medical field?
Because of the pressure to, A, if you work in family practice, give vaccinations, which I in good conscience can't do, mm-hmm. unless I were to give the patient full informed consent, which is not something that most doctors are going to allow you to do. Most clinics won't allow that. And then the pressure for healthcare workers to themselves be vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk for a minute. So if I understand it, you're not opposed to vaccination.
Not at all, no.
Uh-huh. But you are opposed to mandatory vaccination.
Yes, I'm opposed to the government telling me what will be put into my body.
Okay, so explain that a little bit more. I mean, you've said that you were concerned about people having vaccinations without full information, but it goes a little bit farther for you. It goes about whether you should, for you, that people shouldn't be forced to have vaccinations.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some
states. They are mandatory?
In some states, they are somewhat mandatory. So Iowa has two exemptions. We have a medical exemption and a religious exemption. Some states don't have a religious exemption, and some states, like California, they're trying to remove the medical exemption. So in order to attend school, your child has to be completely up to date with the CDC schedule, or they can't go.
So Iowa has exemptions.
Yes.
So what are you lobbying for in Iowa? What is it that you want different?
We want those exemptions to remain in place, and we would really like to.
You're concerned about them being taken away?
Yes. There's been a bill put forward for the past 4 to 5 years that would remove that exemption.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to see the exemptions remain in place, and we'd really like to see people being informed about these and safety studies being done.
Why? It's kind of hard. This is a very nuanced situation. Why do those exemptions exist now, and why would they be removed? Why would there be an effort to remove them?
So it would be for the theory of herd immunity. So the theory is that a certain percentage of the population needs to be up to date on vaccinations in order for immunity to be retained.
So in other words, if a few people get an illness, it can spread.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of. So primitively put.
Yes. So yeah, that's the primitive idea of it. So yeah. Mm-hmm. But the problem is it's a theory, and it was actually based on a doctor who coined the term herd immunity, actually based it off of viewing patients who had had the actual disease of measles. He noticed that in populations where people had had the natural disease, there was a quote, herd immunity of, you know, well, most of them had it, so the rest just don't seem to get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was never based on vaccinations, and it's never been proven. There's no studies proving that if 99 out of 100 people get the vaccine, that one out of 100 won't get any of the illnesses.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, the natural question that I or many people listening to you would have is, why are you so concerned about vaccinations?
A lot of people don't know this, but vaccinations are actually a liability-free product. The manufacturers have no liability at all. All vaccines have never been tested to see if they cause cancer, even though they contain cancer-causing ingredients like formaldehyde, a known carcinogen. The whole system is kind of, so like for instance, the CDC is who puts out the recommendations for the childhood schedule.
The CDC is, what is
Center that? For Disease Control.
Mm-hmm.
They put out the childhood vaccine recommendations. The CDC owns vaccine patents. They're recommending their own vaccines. That's a conflict of interest. There's a lot of money. It's a $32 billion industry right now with a lot more vaccines in the works.
Mm-hmm.
There's not enough safety studies that are being done. There's not enough safety there to be injecting this stuff. Like, for instance, so the Hep B at birth, that was studied to see if it was safe to be given at birth for 4 days.
So do you think, do you see some vaccinations as being safe?
At this point, no, because they're all liability free and there's not rigorous studies being done. So like, mm-hmm. for instance, when you go to the doctor and you get a prescription, that's gone through a gold standard placebo test. Someone took a sugar pill that was nothing, and then someone took the medication and neither knew what they were taking to see if it truly worked. No vaccine has been ever placebo tested.
So it sounds to me that that you essentially are opposed to people taking vaccines now. Am I misunderstanding you?
I'm opposed to people taking them blindly. I want people to be informed that there is risks and something could happen and that they need to be informed of it, because if something does happen, all liability is on themselves.
So how do you see that information happening? What would you like to see in place so that people actually would get that information?
The doctors and the nurses and medical assistants administering the vaccines need to be, just like with any other procedure, you can't go in and have, you know, a mole removed without them explaining to you all the potential side effects and everything like that. It's called informed consent, and it should be happening.
So are you, when you lobby in Des Moines, are you lobbying for some sort of policy or legislation that makes that mandatory, that, that people be given information along with vaccinations?
We are not lobbying for that specifically. We're lobbying for more safety studies and continued the rights to choice.
And then how, but so then how do you picture people actually getting that information? Do you give it out?
So we do give some of that out. One of the areas that we're pursuing is a bill that would make, so there's a system put in place to report any potential reactions after a vaccine is given. It's called the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And federal law states that anything that happens, a rash, you know, a seizure, anything like that, that happens within like 2 to 3 weeks of a vaccine needs to be reported to the system so that they can look for trends, what's going on. That's not being done at a state level. It's a federal law, but it's not being done. And I can assure you it's not being done because I didn't even know it existed until after I had stopped working in a family practice office.
So you're advocating for that to be put in, you know, and implemented?
It's a federal law. It should be being followed, and it's not.
Okay. So there, you are having a conference where a lot of this will be discussed. Tell us just a little bit about what's happening at the conference.
So our conference is Saturday, November 16th. It is at the Holiday Inn Conference Center in Des Moines, right across from the airport. And we are bringing in some pretty big speakers. We have Bobby Kennedy Jr. coming in. We have a pediatrician from Minnesota, Dr. Bob Zajac. We have a double board certified doctor. He's an emergency room doctor as well as an integrative healthcare provider, James Neuenschwander. And then we have Brian Hooker and Susie Olson Corgan, who is she lobbies federally around the state or around the nation to help with this cause.
And what's the purpose of the conference in general? What kind of information? Is this open to the public?
It is open to the public, yes. So you can get tickets on our website.
This is a deep topic.
This is a deep topic. So basically we're just trying to inform people of just all the stuff that's involved with it, the lack of liability, the science, the lack of science that's there, so that people can have conversations with their neighbors, their family, their legislators, and be fully informed on the topic so that they know the facts.
Okay, website if somebody wants to follow up on this conversation?
InformedChoiceIowa.com.
And the information about the conference is there?
It is on there, yep.
Okay, Shanda Burke?
Yes.
Last words?
Thank you for having me, and I hope to see you at the conference.
Okay, thank you.
rosa, 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 abra ti, ay, 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 ay. Rosa, 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 trae tu luz, oy, 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 oy. Rosa, 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 deja aprender, ya, ya. Conecta, 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 conecta con las plantas. Conecta, conecta, conecta con el sol, oh, hey. Conecta, 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 con el viento.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Susan Franzen, here with Ursula Rudenberg and Cynthia McClure, who is engineering. I have been away for 6 weeks and returned just in time for the school board election. I've missed the forums and debates with the candidates, but last Saturday I had the chance to interview all 7 of the candidates running for 4 open seats on the school board. I was impressed with the diversity and impressive backgrounds of those running. Because we have only a few minutes today to present them, each answered the same questions. What are your priorities and what would you do if elected? And then, what are the special qualities that make you different from the other candidates? First, I'll play the statements by 3 women, longtime residents of Ames, who are running for school board for the first time. They are Michelle Enkaitis, Sabrina Shields-Cook, and Amy Edwards. A 4th woman, Awien Majik, came to the U.S. as a refugee from South Sudan when she was 18 years old, so she brings awareness of several cultures. Alex Jacobson, who escaped from the Soviet Union a couple of years before the government ended, has a different perspective on ways to help bright students who are considered bad students because they don't fit the school's norms. And finally, we'll hear from the 2 incumbents, Alan Bierbaum, currently vice president of the school board, and Elisa Franzen, current president. Each candidate will introduce her or himself and will answer these questions. If you were elected, what would your priorities be and how would you hope to accomplish them? And how are you different from the other candidates?
My name is Michelle Enkaitis, and I'm running for position on the Ames school board.
If you were elected, what would your priorities be? What would you hope to accomplish?
So I have 2 real priorities. The first one is to help the school district define what its role is in the mental health of the students. I think it's really important that that be clearly defined and that it doesn't rest solely on the school's shoulders to address mental health for the students, but that we leverage community resources and build some partnerships. The second thing I'd like to accomplish is just to create an open environment for communication. We have many new leadership positions. We have a new superintendent, some new positions at the district level administratively, and then quite a few new principals. And whenever there's a change in leadership like that, I think it's really important that we make sure that we're communicating openly and in all different types of venues so that all people can be involved and understand any changes that are occurring.
What sets you apart from the other candidates? What's different about you?
My background. I have over 25 years of experience in relationship management, human resources, and labor law compliance. I've built my career on building partnerships and reaching consensus, having open communication. I've taken lots of leadership courses, and I think it's a good skill set to be on the school board. I also think that I am very open-minded. I like to listen to both sides before making any kind of decision, and I'm fair and impartial.
Do you have any children?
I have 4 children. I have 1 child in college who graduated from Ames High School. I have two who are currently in high school and one in the middle school. They have been in school from pre-kindergarten at Northwood all the way through graduating from Ames High.
Thank you very much.
My name is Sabrina Fields-Cook, and I am a candidate for the Ames Community School District Board of Directors.
And if you were elected, what would your priorities be? What would you try to accomplish?
Well, my top priority for the district would be communication. I think the district and the school board can do a better job of communicating information with parents, teachers, and the community. I've heard feedback from several community members who feel that their voices are not being heard. They don't have a clear sense of what's going on in the district or how decisions are made. So I think the district and the board should prioritize pushing information out to the public instead of asking the public to come and navigate the website and agenda and minutes of meetings to try to find information. Those things can be difficult to navigate, and I think that the board and the district can push that information out to people so they feel like they understand what's going on and they have a better sense of how decisions are being made. I also think it's important to solicit feedback from all members of the community, including underrepresented populations. I'm concerned that district committees tend to have the same people on them time and time again. And I know some of this is because those are the people who are willing to volunteer, but I think that the district could increase efforts to include new voices in conversations that impact all of our children.
What is different about you from the other candidates?
One thing that is different is I am a graduate of Ames High School and a product of the Ames education system. I've been in Ames for over 30 years, and I have four children currently in the district. I have a high schooler, a middle schooler, an elementary schooler, and a preschooler at Northwood. So I have children at each of the different levels, which gives me a broad perspective on the issues that are facing our schools at those different levels. I also have a strong background in communication with a master's in rhetoric and professional communication, and I have worked in communications at Iowa State for 12 years. I have training in conflict resolution and an understanding of how to navigate challenging conversations that I think could be an asset to the board and to the district.
Thank you very much.
My name is Amy Edwards, and I am running for a seat on the Ames Community School District School Board. Why I am running for the school board is threefold. I want to increase communication between the school and our community because I understand how the clear, concise communication among students, parents, administration, and the Ames community will build stronger relationships and have trust. I will also increase transparency among the district, teachers, and caregivers because I have seen how the need for transparent leadership promotes accountability to all stakeholders in the Ames Community School District. And finally, to increase student growth by advocating for all students' academic, social, and emotional needs. What sets me apart from the other candidates? First and foremost, I have been doing the work as a regular attendee of the school board meetings and work sessions for the last 2.5 years. So I understand the board's role to support the district's purposes and priorities and have seen what work has been done. I can start with a solid foundation. I am ready to serve and can lead as an elected school board member. The second part to that is my empathy and just compassion for all individuals, all the voices within the district and community. We do have one child. We have a son, Ethan, who is a fifth grader in the district. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Owen Majak.
If you're elected, what are your priorities? What would you hope to accomplish?
First, I'll look at the education for special need children. I'm hoping that we'll have more services for students with a special need. I'm hoping that we find a better way to help students with mental health problems. Also, I want to revisit the LIP program and also the ESL. And I'm hoping that we go green, reduce and reuse paper, and also communication with parents, finding a better way to communicate with the community.
What is special about you? How are you different from the other candidates?
I'm from South Sudan. I came here as a refugee years ago. Growing up in so many different cultures, I do speak Arabic and I speak Dinka. And I grew up in Sudanese culture, and I came here when I was 18, turning 19. So I have a little bit of background from the American culture and the Sudanese culture. What set me apart is diversity. I'm able to reach to the American culture and also the big population of the Arab culture that are here and the African community. I am passionate about work. I love to work with children. I love to help everybody who is in need.
Do you have any children?
Yes, I do have five. Ages 12 and 4 months old. 12, 10, and 6, they go to the school district here, middle school, and fellows.
Well, thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Alex Jakobson, and I have a lovely wife, Ludmila, and three kids. My oldest son was finished this year ICU college engineering in age 19. However, he was labeled in middle school with his friends, mostly Latino, like a bad student. I also have kid in high school, and I have youngest daughter in elementary school. So I hear a lot about a lot of questions about experience, what experience I have can help to the school district. And I do have a lot of experience from teaching and instructing people in different areas and different subjects. But I like to speak more about the kids themselves, because I believe I'm not important. Kids important. And experience is only tool, and it depends how you can use it. Like, for example, we have people in school board who have construction experience, but I don't see it's helping right now, because instead of dedicate time and money to the education, then they like to build. So it's one of the reasons I ran to the school board. I believe we have wrong priority. I believe it should be kids, teachers, education tools, and facilities. And unfortunately, right now, I see facilities, it's a higher priority, and I like to change it. One of my biggest motivation also to come to school board, we really love to be here. We really love the Ames, and I try to contribute, and I try to receive favor to this country and this community. And I found education is the best place I can contribute and receive favor for community in the country.
And what is different about you from the other candidates?
I believe my experience how to put kids
yes.
through the system, make them successful, it's make me different. I know how to pass the children who mark by system like bad students, how they make them successful. I did it for my kid, and I believe I helped to some other my friends, and I believe I can do it in much wider area if community give me privilege to serve them in like a school board director.
My name is Alan Bierbaum. I've served on the school board the past year and a half, and I am running for Ames School Board this year.
If you're elected, what do you hope to accomplish? What are your priorities?
I think one of the biggest priorities we need to do is just to improve the communication we have with the community and make sure that we set clear expectations for what the district is going after right now and ensuring that we're succeeding at that. And then one of those priorities that I think we need to give special focus to this year is mental health, because we're seeing all types of mental health challenges at all the levels of the school district. And I think we really need to pull together a lot of community partners and see what we can do to try to get ahead of that and to make sure we serve our kids there.
And what is different about you from the other candidates? What stands out?
I've lived here in Ames for 25 years, and my background, I came through Iowa State and got my master's and doctorate and then started a company. So through that process and then at the company I'm at now, I just have a lot of experience here in Ames, engaging with all sorts of community stakeholders and experience on a wide variety of boards, both at the state and local level, on figuring out how to provide the right level of governance and oversight and still make sure that we accomplish the primary things we need to.
Do you have any children?
I have 3 children in the district. They are in 2nd grade, 4th grade, and 7th grade.
Thank you very much.
My name is Alisa Franson.
And if you were elected, what do you hope to accomplish? What are your priorities?
My priorities really are to follow through on those priorities that have been established by the district over the past couple of years. We have identified 5 areas that are priority areas for our district to focus on. So they are educational equity and improvement, the mental health and well-being of our students, recruitment and retention of high-quality staff, transparent financial planning, and clear and consistent communication. So my priority really is for the board and the district administration to work together to develop metrics of success related to these district initiatives so that we can support our leadership in following through on these priorities and remain accountable to our community.
And what is different about you from the other candidates?
Sure. So I think that what would make me unique is I'm running for re-election, and I've been on the board, and I can draw on these experiences of board service, including the leadership roles that I've held, and so I think that it's valuable to understand the conversations that we've been having for the past couple of years, and those are conversations among the board members, conversations with our district leadership, with our teachers, but also our conversations that we've been having with our community. Those were all the things that helped us to identify those priorities, so I think that I provide that lens coming in, having participated in those conversations, to be able to now move forward in establishing those metrics and accountability points for our district. I have been involved in education. Both my undergraduate and graduate degrees are in education fields. So I am a former high school math teacher. I served at Iowa State as an assistant dean of students. So both of those work experiences certainly provide me a level of understanding in terms of with education. Beyond that, I've been very involved in the community with the Parks and Recreation Commission, been involved in my church, and been involved with the Elementary Bond Referendum and the Furman Aquatic Center Bond Referendum. So I think looking at those wide ranges of activities helps to inform me as a board member.
Do you have any children?
Yes. My husband and I have 4 children. They range from kindergarten up to high school. So we are at elementary, middle school, and high school. And we have lived in Ames for 19 years.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want to add?
I would just really encourage everyone to get out and vote. It is school board is an elected position that has a direct impact on our children and the taxpayer. So I think it's really important that voters get informed and get out and vote on the 5th.
This is KHOI Community Radio. And you've just heard from the 7 school board candidates who will be on the ballot for tomorrow, as well as the city council candidates. So be sure to vote. This is Susan Franzen, your host for today, and I have the pleasure now of introducing Bill Youngklaus, past Grand Master of Arcadia Masonic Lodge number 249, to read to us the proclamation from last Saturday declaring Ames Masonic Lodge number 249 day. Here's Bill.
Thank you, Susan. Yes, I thought I'd start with just reading the proclamation from the mayor. It goes, whereas on November 2nd, 2019, Arcadia Lodge number 249 will celebrate its 150th anniversary of its founding, and whereas Arcadia Lodge has faithfully and fraternally served the Ames community for those 150 years, and whereas most of Arcadia Lodge's members reside in the community of Ames and participate in its daily activities and its seasonal festivals, and whereas Arcadia Lodge annually awards a scholarship to an Ames Public School graduate and honors an Ames Public School teacher as Teacher of the Year, and whereas Masons have served in a significant capacity in our United States history, our first president, George Washington, was a distinguished Mason, along with 13 other U.S. presidents, as well as Ben Franklin, Patrick Henry, Paul Revere, and many other U.S. public services. And whereas Masons have served this great state of Iowa for 175 years, now therefore, I, Mayor John Haley, by virtue of the authority vested in me as Mayor of the City of Ames, and on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim November 2, 2019, as Ames Masonic Lodge number 249 day. So that's what we celebrated last Friday, Susan.
That's right. Well, I thought that today, though, maybe I misread the article in the paper. Today is the official day.
Well, and actually, our anniversary was really June 2nd, 1869 was when we started. And it's a joy for me to be in this particular location because for you listeners, if you're aware of where we're projecting from, this building – or this location in 1869 was a livery stables, and it had a forge in to do horseshoeing, and up above was the first Masonic Lodge. And would you want me to read a little story about what it was like
That's right. Hard to imagine what a lodge over a livery stable was like.
Okay, there's a short paragraph here that we found in our history, and it says this: imagine then a lodge meeting. It says, the coal smoke of the forge below embellished our altar as it oozed through the unmatched floor. Swallows' nests of mud were cemented to the rafters that were uncovered, there being neither lath or plaster. Cobwebs swung to and fro from rafter to rafter by the evening breeze. A dry goods box, our altar. The lesser lights, the sun and moon and stars, rested on nail kegs. Our master wielded a clubbed paintbrush for his gavel, and Senior Warden was elaborately furnished with a nail keg for a seat and a tobacco barrel his stand. Brother L.Q. Hoggett, a name we know well in Ames, wielded his crutch for his gavel as Junior Warden with as good furniture to sit upon as the Senior Warden, and Secretary S.J. Starr was as well furnished as back alley boxes would permit. So that was what our first lodge was like, right above where we're sitting now back in 1869.
Well, we've come a long way.
Yes, we have. Yes, we have.
And, of course, from our front window, we can look across the street and see the entrance to the largest of your subsequent homes, the what is now the Octagon Building.
Yes, we were in that building from 1917 until 1979. And the lodge room was on the third, up on the third floor, which was not uncommon with lodges as they were developed. They would put the lodge room up on the second floor to give it a little more privacy, and then they'd often have businesses on the floor below. And so that was the case here. We might mention about our number, Arcadia 249. That relates to the fact that we are the 249th Masonic Lodge in Iowa. And
In Iowa alone,
right.
Already by 1869.
Yep, there were that many already in Iowa. And, in fact, the one over in Nevada was quite a bit ahead of us because it was 99. And before we could form, the Nevada Lodge had to sign off on approval, and we noted that their vote was only 14-7 that there be a lodge in Ames. So we weren't necessarily favorites with them because at that time Nevada had 900 people and Little Ames only had 600. But they did allow us to go ahead and put a lodge here. Masonry has been in Iowa for 175 years, 150 in Ames, about 175. So we were actually the Masonic Grand Lodge of Iowa formed 2 years before Iowa became a state. And the first lodge in Iowa was over in Burlington. So they came up along the river in 1941. So Masonry goes back a long time in Iowa.
In 1841.
1841, yes, thank you. And from a real basic historical perspective, Masonry, by most people's measurements, started 300 years ago over in England, about 1917, and then came to the United States. And so many know, as I mentioned in the proclamation, that George Washington was one of the first Masons in the United States.
Well, some of the principles of the Masons, I think, influenced our Constitution.
Yes, affected that. And also an important part of Masonry related to the United States is our support of public education, because public education was started in the United States so that a democracy could function. And so Masonry strongly supports public education all across the country and has done so. And it's one reason why one of our biggest charities is supporting scholarships. There are 2,000 scholarships given every year in the state of Iowa by the Grand Lodge. We in Ames do one for an Ames student and one for a Gilbert student, and we also honor a public school teacher of the year. So public education is very important to Masonry.
And religious tolerance is very important.
Yes, it is. The one thing to be a Mason that you have to have is a belief in a supreme deity. But how you perceive that, then, is of no other person's personal need to know. And so, for instance, in our lodge, on our altar, we have both the Hebrew text, we have the Quran, and we have the Christian Bible, because we've had members of all three in our lodge. And of course, across the world, there are members of many other religions as well. So that tolerance is very important to us.
I hope that we can hear more about the history of the Masons in Iowa, perhaps on Wednesday.
I'd be happy to elaborate more.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your host today. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Susan Franson, and thank you for joining us for this past hour. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. And you can also hear a recording of this show later on today. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. We love you, Paul Nelson, and thank you for listening. And we'll see you again
on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided in part by Iowa State Center, presenting Ailey 2 at C.Y. Stevens, merging the spirit and energy of young dance talent with the passion and creative vision of emerging choreographers. November 13th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center@iastate.edu.